everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Cabot Cove Gazette, the world's best Murder, She Wrote podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Keys, and I'm joined today by Paul Gagliardi.
I'm now recording this weeks later, and I'm sitting outside, so you'll probably hear the sounds of birds chirping behind me. But Paul and I forgot to go back and add in his bio. So here we are weeks later, and I'm faking it. Paul Gagliardi is teaching assistant professor at Marquette University in Milwaukee, where he also teaches drama and film, among other subjects. His recent book, All Play and No Work, American Work Ideals and the Comic Plays of the Federal Theater Project, was published by Temple University Press in 2023. In addition, Paul is exceptionally well-versed in classic television, such as Columbo and Murder, She Wrote. Now back to the real episode, and I'm going to pretend I said that in real time.
And Paul, welcome to the Cabot Cove Gazette.
It is a pleasure to be here. I have to say, this episode, I feel a little bit, why this episode? I don't know why this is the episode I'm appearing on, but
yeah, like, of all the episodes that I could be like, hey, do you want to be a guest host? Like, I pick one of the ones that requires the most sensitivity and is the most awkward to talk about. We like throwing people in the deep end here at the Cabot Cove Gazette. So on that note, we are discussing season 4, episode 10, Indian Giver. That's the only time I will use that word today, I hope. And Paul, throwing you in the deep end, give us a really quick plot summary for people who haven't seen the episode in a while.
So it is a Cabot Cove episode. There is a town celebration, and all of a sudden, a young man, a young First Nations person appears on horseback, disrupting the ceremony, throws a spear that hits the podium of where the mayor is speaking. And there's a note attached, and basically the young man is descended from an Algonquin chief. And in the 1750s, the Algonquin chief was granted all the land around Cabot Cove by the British government for helping out in the French and Indian War, and wants to charge everyone in Cabot Cove rent for being on his land. And of course, Jessica Fletcher and the sheriff are, trying to protect the man who has riled up everyone in Cabot Cove. There is a lot of racial epithets thrown at his way.
Yep.
And so they send out the mayor of Cabot Cove sends for a expert in Native American art, or a Native American historian, presumably at the University of Maine, to come and check the veracity of the young man, the young Algonquin man's statement or claim. And it's found to be accurate. Meanwhile, there's a B plot where Jessica meets, do you remember the person's name, the young woman who's being abused by her husband?
Her name is Mrs. Langley, and she's played by Jennifer Salt. And it's a Cabot Cove episode, right? So there's got to be a B plot that's about a real estate development. Like, is there any other B plot in the Cabot Cove episodes?
There's also a real estate development B plot.
Someone's going to develop a resort. It's a Cabot Cove episode.
Yes.
I think what you were getting to was that we have this plot that seems like sort of not central to what's actually happening, where a woman is clearly being abused. And it turns out that, like, she's actually murdered her husband, and her brother, who's one of the major racist townies.
Yes.
Had this brilliant idea that we could frame George Longbow for it, because who cares about him?
And they almost succeed, but they do not.
Yeah.
And of course, George Longbow, like, thank you for, listen, I am terrible with names. I barely remember my kids' names. So I'm thankful that you're here with the character.
Hope they're
list.
Not listening.
They're not. they might listen.
I think that so obviously we should start with the elephant in the room, right? Which is that this is one of those episodes where Murder, She Wrote is trying to do something that pushes buttons and, you know, makes us think critically about social issues. In this case, Native and colonial relations. But in order to do that, because it's the 80s, the way that they accomplish that is by like populating the script with people saying racial slurs, and then Jessica having to be like, oh, that's bad. It's so from a 21st century standpoint, it is like super triggering. There's also a moment where the racist townies are chasing George Longbow through the woods and they catch him. They're being vigilantes. The only thing is, thank goodness, they don't lynch him. What they do instead is like drive him through a town on the back of a truck honking, and like they've got him like in handcuffs. And honestly, it is the most triggering scene I've ever seen in this series. And I kept thinking about Ahmaud Arbery and wondering if that's what he felt like to be chased by a truck. And it just, the whole thing is so triggering. And I can only imagine how Native people feel watching this. But I do have to say, much like the last episode we had that had Natives, the one that was set in New Mexico at the archaeology dig, or much like I was thinking about Powder Keg for a lot of this episode, you know, I think those are episodes where Murder, She Wrote is trying to make people engage with racial issues. It's just that it's doing it in a way that, to a 21st century sensibility, it's like, but you just brought up all the stuff you're trying to tell us is terrible, right?
I remember watching the episode, and this was one that I had never really seen before. And if I did, I don't
Oh,
remember
really?
watching it. Yeah. And when it's, and I did a brief, when you pitched the idea of me guesting on the show, and you said, this is the episode we're going to talk about. And I did a quick research of it, and I was like, oh, ooh. And then watching the episode, yeah, the moment where George Longbow is beaten up, they don't show the townspeople assaulting him, but
No,
you
we
do
just
see
see him
them,
bloody afterward.
yeah,
And
and
they
on the
say, oh,
back of
he
the truck.
fell down a lot.
And there's a winking acknowledgement of it by the sheriff, but he doesn't push back against, this is something directly out of like racial apartheid in the South. And I had to stop the episode for a good 20 minutes, because I was just really shocked at that imagery. I have to ask you, like, what's it? So I presume you've seen the episode before.
A million times,
Yeah. Who's the villain here?
Well, I mean, the episode clearly sets up at the beginning that it's George Longbow, right? He makes this, as you said, as you explained, like he makes this sweeping entrance, and sort of disrupting the town. And I mean, he throws a spear at Sam Booth, right? Like he's really caught catching. Who doesn't want to throw a spear at Sam Booth? But
Well, that's true.
he,
That's fair.
I think, you know, and then he announces that he's going to start charging them rent and that the town belongs to him. And so I think from at the beginning, he's sort of the villain, right? And then Jessica's like, this doesn't add up. Like, this is something is going on. We need to really, like, let's make sure this is true. And we actually find out from George that actually all he really wants is to establish a Native college fund.
Yeah.
So, like, the money wasn't even for any selfish purposes. So, very quickly, it's like, this is not the bad guy, you know, and just as quickly as we realize he's not the bad guy, I should also say, like, part of that is when he shows up at the town hall wearing a three-piece suit. So I think the episode's engaging with like respectability politics a little bit there, because
Right.
by contrast, we have the townies in flannel who are yelling racial slurs at him, right? So it's like, whose side would you be on? Of course you support George Longbow. He's college educated, he's wearing a suit, and he's perfectly normal. And they're like drunk and wearing crappy clothes and calling him names and chasing him. So I think very quickly then the villain shifts to be the racist townies, right? And then I think what you're getting at was like, nowhere in there do we think anything of Langley, who's actually our murder victim, or the machinations about the resort hotel. Like, we don't really think about that too much. So the murder actually becomes a surprise. You're kind of expecting George to get murdered at first, right?
Right. It was interesting because I was rewatching it again yesterday. I was thinking, like, if someone turned this episode off halfway through, right? Because the murder happens pretty late, typically. It's like after the second act break, maybe. It would be really interesting to see, like, because everything that the show is doing is leading you to think George Longbow is the bad guy. And it was very weird for me, not that I empathize with the townspeople, but It's almost like the show is making us empathize with the townspeople, or trying to make us empathize with the townspeople.
I mean, for the first part, yeah, like this is going to ruin them economically, right? Like, do you imagine that you find out that like your biggest asset is your home and all the equity that you've built up into it, and you don't own your home, you don't own your land? Like, that's terrifying, right? They're going to lose everything. Which I think, cool. Like, that's an interesting twist on teaching white people what Native peoples went through, right? Literally
Right.
lost everything in their land, right?
And it's funny because it's not funny, but it's interesting how like the one character says, like, how dare you do this? You're taking my land without me having a say in it. And the guy's like, yeah, pretty much. Like, this is how it
Right.
works. And then the
This
show
how you
reveals,
taught me that's how it works, right?
it's like the old drug commercial. I learned this by watching
I learned
you.
by watching you. I think later, I think we have a similar thing happening where the professor's daughter is friends with George, and that's how he
Oh,
kind of got
yes.
access to the university and did all this research to figure out that he could pull this maneuver on the town. And she's like, "Why are you being so like bombastic? Like, what, can't you just like get along and stuff?" And again, I think the episode is trying to engage with like questions of respectability politics here in a very like gentle 1980s TV way, because he's like, he gives this like beautiful monologue about how Native populations have been subjugated and genocided, and like just they've tried and they've been so beaten down that now there's nothing left to do but sort of fight back, right? And like stand up for themselves. And I think it's actually a really great monologue. And I think it helps us understand what things look like from his perspective, because the episode very much has a white perspective. It's a very white POV, because Jessica's our character, right?
I don't know. Like with this, I know if I can recommend this episode. Like, there's still enough problematic
Oh, yeah.
elements to it too. But then there is like a there's almost a face turn at the end, and
Well,
and you
let's talk
almost.
about that. Let's talk about Jessica in all of this, because she's always our character who sort of stands between these sides. I mean, we saw that in Powder Keg, right? We had the black sheriff and the white town, and everybody's about to lynch the guy they think is guilty of murder, and the sheriff's trying to hold the town together, and we have Jessica sort of standing between them, like trying to take the temperature down. And I think a very similar thing happens here. And I think once George Longbow is in jail, he's suspected of murder, so it makes sense to have him in jail. But it also just seems like a protective measure, much like it did in Powder Keg, or like To Kill a Mockingbird, right? Like referencing that, like when the town is this toxic, like sometimes the safest place, unfortunately, is to be in the jail cell, So I think they had that sort of To Kill a Mockingbird feel. And meanwhile, Jessica like goes into the jail cell, and she's like, "You and I are the only ones who know you're innocent." Like, she does not think this guy did the murder. It doesn't make any sense. Why would he have used his own weapon? There's too many clues pointing to him, and he's very smart. He's college educated. She's like, "I know you didn't do this. So you have to talk to me. Like, I'm the only person defending you in this town. Like, you've got to tell me what happened." And I think, at the end of the episode, she tells him that she's actually started a committee to figure out how to fund scholarships. So she loved what he was going to use the money for, even if she didn't agree with how he was doing it. And so she's going to support him. And I think that's our, this is like such classic TV maneuver, right? We have like some social issue, and we have characters on both sides of it, and then our POV character is sort of in the middle doing the little, polite dance,
And even at the very beginning of the episode, when there's a town hall meeting and Longbow shows up in his really nice three-piece suit and basically says, like, goes into detail about his plan. And Jessica's there, like, I'm Jessica Fletcher. It's a question. Like, she's just tampering down, like, the rhetoric
Right.
as the rest of the town's ready to kill him. I
You
don't think.
notice that she also always called him Mr. Longbow and later George when she knew him better? Like, everyone else calls him that Indian. Okay, I did say the word a second time. They all call him that and refer to him as that behind his back and to his face. And she always calls him Mr. Longbow.
I did notice that now that you mentioned that. Yeah. She there's a level of dignity that she gives him,
Yeah.
and I think
She's
there's a
good people.
She is. Yeah. Even though like she's in, but she's in that awkward position. She has the empathy for the townspeople, which again, yeah, if you're threatened with removal from your home, sure. But then, yeah, the only, yeah, giving all the empathy to George Longbow is, it is like the best of her, right? The realization that there's more complexity to the story. It's not just simply the knee-jerk reaction of the police or what the initial clues are saying. And I think that's a credit to her and the just the acting in general. Like it's very calm, but also in control. I thought that was really interesting this episode too, that as the town is like tearing itself apart to try to get at Mr. Longbow, like she's like just this good mediating influence, which
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen her do in an
And to
episode
Sam and
in quite a
Amos's
while.
credit, they both know to rely on her for that purpose. Like, there's a scene where they are talking to the professor, and trying to figure out like the authenticity of these documents. And it's like, why are Jessica and Seth even there? Like, she's a novelist and he's the town doctor. Like, why are they there? Right? Nobody voted for them. But it's like, I think, Amos and Sam Booth both know these are the smart people. We should just listen to them, right?
And as two academics, I think we can kind of appreciate that. Like we should be listened to more often in society.
So let's talk a little bit about the murder, because I think this is also a sort of classic Murder, She Wrote maneuver that we find out ultimately what happened was Langley was drunk. He was abusing his wife. In self-defense, she stabs him. And so it's not really a cold-blooded, premeditated murder, and she's not really a true murderer in the sense of like the scheming diabolical murder, right? We've seen this a couple of times now in Murder, She Wrote, where women are being abused and they feel they have no other choice and this is the only way to stand up for themselves. And I think the show always wants us to be really sympathetic to them. I think we're just not supposed to be sympathetic to her brother for having the idea that like, well, we can cover this up by framing somebody else, right? But it seems to me like we're supposed to feel badly for her and like, honestly, the episode doesn't even tell us much about what happens to her. She sort of explains the murder and the episode kind of moves on, you know?
It's not really a satisfactory, I mean, it's satisfactory in the sense Longbow is found not guilty, right? Or found innocent, maybe. But that just, and I've seen a few episodes recently that follow the same pattern, right? That just like the murder is. Or the murderer is just like the story is just left into the ether. And I guess in this case it's fine, but yeah, but you one episode I just listened to of this show recently, like the discussion of like justice. And I guess this is going like tricky territory for me. Like the murder is not exactly solved and it's presented to us as completely understandable, but there still needs to be like some punishment doled out. And that left me feeling very unsatisfied
Yeah,
as a
I mean,
viewer.
sometimes we get Jessica saying like, it's okay, it was self-defense, or we get some sort of commentary on it, right? We don't really get that here. I think probably because she's so pissed at these people for framing George at this point, but
True.
the whole thing was goofy. Like, so she, the woman, our murderer, is played by Jennifer Salt, who I love from Soap, which is like one of my favorite TV shows. And they make her look terrible in this. Like, even before we see bruises on her, she just looks haggard and worn down. Like, she's clearly having a rough life. But after she kills the guy, there's like blood all over her kitchen. So she has the brilliant idea that she'll just paint everything. And that's our sort of clue that something is up. It's like how fun to be in the 1980s where like you could just paint over blood and no one would ever find it.
You're in this sweet spot between like 19th century, we're just like putting people in jail because they're Irish versus like forensic analysis. And you can paint over stuff and you'll be found not guilty or no one will suspect you. It's.
But I thought what was really stupid was the clue about the sand. So there's like sand around the murder victim's body. So that's supposed to tell us he wasn't murdered in the town hall. He was murdered out on the beach and then the body was brought to the town hall. But actually, that's not true. He was murdered in the kitchen and then they planted the sand. And then the racist townie brother like took George Longbow's shoes and put sand all over them. But for some reason, the sand didn't stick to the bottom of the shoe, and that's how Jessica knows it was planted sand. Paul, this is not good. This is so ridiculous.
This is monk level contrivance. When you've gone monk, you've gone too far.
It's ridiculous, is what it is. And also, like, I just have to say, like, why is it always about shoes? This has got to be like the 100th time we've had shoes be the final clue. Like, I'm telling you, Jessica Fletcher is a shoe fetishist. I know it's like a running joke on this podcast, but like, this is evidence, right? Who pays that much attention to shoes that she immediately turns them over? She can tell you what the sole of them was made of and how sticky it should be. This is
How
ridiculous.
so now I'm thinking, like, how involved would Jessica Fletcher be in like sneaker culture right now?
Oh my God, she'd be so like she'd be wearing her like polyester pants with like some really killer expensive sneakers, right? Or like riding her bicycle with like a knee-length skirt, but like sneakers. That'd be
She'd be
so
standing,
cool.
she would no, here, okay, here's the episode I'm pitching. She's
Yeah.
standing in line at a high-end sneaker store in downtown New York to get the latest like Air Jordans, and she finds out like somebody in line has been murdered, and she solves that case and then gets her brand new Air
Without
Jordan
ever leaving the line.
without ever leaving the line.
That would be something Adrian Monk could do.
That's very true. I've
Yeah.
just monked my monk. Yeah.
I would love to see him and Jessica Fletcher and Poirot. Like, I'm sure there's gonna be crossover fic, right?
Sure.
I think what she has on the two of them, Poirot is probably the two of them probably have better observational and deductive skills, I would venture to say. I'm going to get angry letters for saying that. But I think what her skill is that she has the charm and the people skills, right? Like she can go into George's jail cell and be like, tell me what happened. And she can like hold the murder lady's hand and be like, clearly your husband has beaten you. Tell me what happened. And then people will confess, right?
And my wife and I have been rewatching Monk, and the thing that I found refreshing, even with this episode, was like the like as you just said, the personality of the detective and being a people person. I know that's part of Monk's character, but yeah, to find empathy for the alleged murderer and to find, you know, a connection to the abused wife. I mean, as you just said, like that's something you don't see in other detective fiction, and that's something that's always drawn me to her.
Yeah.
And yeah, but I will say, like, yeah, as a murder goes, the plot, it's plausible, right? Like your sister's being abused and you're going to murder like her boyfriend or husband. And now doing the stuff with the sand and throwing the spear in his chest. Okay, that might be a bit
Ridiculous.
much.
But I mean, we're not supposed to like he. I feel like we're supposed to think he's probably going to go to prison and she probably won't.
Yeah.
Like, even though she's the one who did the murder, like, she was mostly acting in self-defense. What he did was really shady and he tried to set up somebody else.
Yeah, he's going as the accessory to, I don't know what that would be
Don't
exactly.
know what. Yeah, something. He should go to prison. He's a
Yeah.
racist townie. He should go to prison. Okay, let's talk about the guest stars though before we run out of time because we have some interesting people in this. First of all, it's a Sam Booth episode. Love Sam Booth, the world's most useless mayor. I mean, he literally has a line in this episode where he goes, I'm gonna do something just as soon as I figure out what to do.
It's a, does he also have the line, is the professor on our side or his side?
Has Jessica that. And she
Yes,
says
okay.
she's on the side of right, which is a very Jessica answer, right? She just cares about the truth. Yeah. I love Sam Booth. So then we have Jennifer Salt, as I mentioned, and then we have Theodore Bacall in this episode, Paul.
Yes.
Fiddler on the Roof himself. He's our professor.
I
This
mean, I
feels
think
very significant, and I feel like you should say something about this. I feel like you'll know more than I will about this.
see, this is weird because all I know of his roles is he's on an episode of Columbo.
Oh,
And
that's right. Oh, that's a
yes,
good episode.
it's a really good episode. Is that the one that he's like the he's
I
part
love
of
that
the
we're both like, oh, it's a great episode, and then neither of us can remember which one it actually is.
It's the one, I think he's the member of the Mensa Society that
Yes.
kills his rival. And
Yes. And there's
then
a whole thing with the record in that one, remember?
so he sets up like this Rube Goldberg kind of setup in the parlor that is attached to a record and like the open window, and Columbo figures out that it's, oh gosh, that it's, yeah, it's a great episode of Columbo.
The bye-bye sky-high IQ murder case.
Yes. And Bickle plays an accountant who's like a kind of shady accountant. And that's the episode with Jamie Lee Curtis, plays a waitress.
Oh, I don't remember that. That's amazing.
Again, can't remember my kids' names, but you know, this works.
Very English professor of you. I remember every detail about the text.
I'm in your class? No, you're not. I don't know who you are.
okay, what else should we say about this one? I mean, we have a lot of Jessica and Seth scenes and Jessica and Amos scenes, which is always my favorite. And of course, our final moment, after they sort of she tells George about the scholarship and wishes him well, it's a very prolonged ending. And they even like they're all in Jessica's house drinking coffee and then they go outside. There's like multiple setups to this, and I'm like,
Yes.
did you guys just run? Did you have time to fill? Like, this is very strange. It seems like you inflated your budget for no reason here. But it's her and Seth are outside, and she's like, by the way, like, how come when everyone was really worried about losing everything, you weren't? And Sam's like, ha ha ha, I rent, and that's like our final moment.
Yeah.
How is Sam? Can we talk about this for a second? Like, how is Seth? Or I said Sam, but I meant Seth. You guys know I meant Seth. How is he like? He's the town doctor. And like, how does he? I guess we were told before that he had some money problems in the past, but I just, how is he like not wealthy enough to own his own house in Cabot Cove, Maine in the 80s? That's weird to me.
I
This
just thought
also
that was
gets back to the question about how long he's been in Cabot Cove, too, right? Like,
right.
maybe he's renting because he hasn't been there that long, and maybe he doesn't know that he's gonna stay that long.
I just thought it was a throwaway line, but now that I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, but we're English professors. There are no throwaway lines.
That this is okay. You got me there. You got me there. If I knew what your name was, I'd be upset. Don't, but also like the episode goes out of its way. And this has been a continual thing in most of the Cabot Cove episodes. Like you said, somebody, there's a real estate thing happening.
Just
So
always somebody's trying to develop the waterfront, always.
maybe he's smart in that, like, why would I put money out? But then renting, you think you, okay, if he's a doctor, you
Yeah.
think he would be smart enough to put, like, invest in the real estate, because if the real estate prices go up, that he can sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
How many apartments are there in Cabot Cove? Like, is he
I mean, I
renting an
assume he
entire
rents a
house?
house, right?
Yeah.
But from whom? Like, who's richer than Seth and Jessica in this town? I guess we have seen that there are rich people in that one episode.
True.
That one that I can't remember now. Anyway, I just think it's funny. And also in that scene, he's wearing an Aaron sweater and he looks very handsome, except his hair in this episode is truly terrible. And in two episodes, we'll be back in Cabot Cove. And instead, it's like in this episode, it's like parted down the middle and it's just like
Oh
it
yeah.
look going sideways and it looks terrible. And in two episodes, we'll be back in Cabot Cove and it's like shaved and spiky and he looks so much more handsome. So
Oh, good, good. Yeah, I didn't, and Jessica basically is in jeans the entire episode, I think.
yeah.
So not a whole lot of commentary on her fashion
No, she's in her Cabot
sense.
Cove, but I love the thoughtfulness that they do the fashion. Like she's always in her. She always is in muted colors and like more casual fabrics in Cabot Cove. And then in the next episode, we're gonna see her like dressed to the nines, right? Because she's at a fancy hotel in New York. Like they're so thoughtful. The show is just really great. So even though this episode is complicated, last note, if you're doing a rewatch of the series, are we skipping this one or are we watching it?
You know, I think for me initially, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said I don't ever want to watch this one again.
Yeah.
And in the second viewing yesterday, I found more nuance in it. I think I was just like really shocked at some of the things being said, and And the fact that like George Longbow is played by a Sri Lankan man, like
We didn't
there's
even
that
talk about
element to,
that,
we
right?
didn't even think about that. But I think the show redeems itself in I would rewatch it.
I think, like I said, I think that it does the thing that TV does best, which is be a what Horace Newcomb described as a cultural forum, right? So it like raises these issues so that the next day at the water cooler, we all talk about them and how did we feel about them and who exactly what you've done, you know, who's right, who's the villain. But I think it's challenge. I will say, like, you know, if you haven't seen it in a while, listeners, you know, just beware because it is pretty triggering to a 21st century sensibility. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this episode. So, for the Cabot Cove Gazette, I'm Bridget Keys.
And I'm Paul Gagliardi.
And we thank you so much for being here, Paul. And we'll catch everybody next week.
Thanks, and thank you, Bridget.
The Cabot Cove Gazette's theme song is Reaching the Sky by Alexander Nakarada, used under Creative Commons license. You can find us on social media. We're Cabot Cove Gazette on Facebook and @Cove Gazette on Instagram and Twitter.